If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Last time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
I'll tell you what, man, I've got my veto out. I'm sort of rolling it around in my hand.
Finger hovering over the veto trigger.
God, but the thing is, like, I'm not reading ahead. If I veto this, we could get an even worse episode after.
That's a good point.
Oh, God, I just hate Troy's mom episodes.
Yeah. I mean, like, they clearly know that she's annoying because every time she comes on after this, the characters, like, roll their eyes and try to make excuses to not be there or whatever.
Fuck it, man. I'm gonna veto.
Oh, really?
I don't want it. I don't want it. Yeah.
I think, Adam, just because I'm a diabolical asshole, I'm going to nullify your veto.
Oh, my God. Oh, that sucks. That means we're out of vetoes for the rest of the season.
And this would be the season that you would want two vetoes.
Oh, God.
And now, the conclusion.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a podcast about Star Trek by a couple of guys who are still a bit embarrassed to have a podcast about Star Trek. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica, and I am not just embarrassed right now. I'm actually angry because we shouldn't be doing this episode.
Oh yeah, this is the ep that you attempted to veto, and I overrode your veto. I burned myself. It was a Pyrrhic victory because I burned myself to make you watch this one.
Yeah, and I burned in all kinds of ways in the process.
Yeah, I had fun watching this. I thought it was funnier than I remembered it being. This the episode we're talking about is Haven, the intro to Counselor Troy's mother, Waxana Troy.
I think I took the most notes on this episode than any of them. There was a ton to digest.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this episode. Should we just get right into it?
If we have to.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
The episode starts out with the Enterprise arriving at a planet called Haven, where Counselor Troy has been summoned by her mother, Loxana, and the episode begins with Riker in his room enjoying some holographic harp babes playing some harp music.
Sorry, ladies. Duty call.
Did you notice that they're mini babes, though? They're like desktop babes.
Yeah, yeah. Like 24-inch babes.
They also clearly want to fuck him.
Yeah, they're definitely making real, like, bedroom eyes at him. And he is looking very blissed out watching this pretty mediocre, not especially noteworthy harp playing. He gets called away to the transporter room, and in the transporter room, a Mardi Gras head gets beamed into the... But it's kind of weird, because Yar is like, there's some object getting beamed up from the surface, and they're like, all right, well, we don't know anything about it or what it is, but go ahead and allow it to be on the ship. And then it's this...
More great Enterprise security protocols in action.
Right. Come on, Yar. Get it together.
And they beam up Jambi from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah, it's totally Jambi. It's like a weird silver box with a silver face on it and it's like an inert silver face, but then they cut away and they cut back and it's a man's face, like in rubber. And he's like,
Mecca Lecca High, Mecca Heiny Ho.
Happily announcing the impending marriage that's to take place. And then he like goes back to being dormant and pops open, and a bunch of the kinds of beads that you get for showing your boobs at Mardi Gras pop out.
Yeah, and Tasha Yar seems really stoked on those beads for a future that doesn't have an economy that we recognize, that doesn't give any sort of worth to the idea of jewels. She is...
And for jewels that are very explicitly made out of cheap plastic.
Yeah.
She is pumped. So we come to find out that Troy has had a previously prearranged marriage to a human doctor named Wyatt Miller.
Isn't Wyatt Miller the name of one of the kids in Weird Science? Am I wrong about that?
I don't know. I don't know that movie as well as I probably should, given this nerdy podcast. His parents tracked down her mother to enforce this arranged marriage, which is like, so, you know, that we can talk about that, the idea that an advanced spacefaring culture that's achieved membership in the Federation would still bind its citizens to something as horrible sounding to me as an arranged marriage, but maybe that's just my own cultural bias. I don't know.
Yeah, you do sound very biased and privileged, actually.
I gotta check both of those things.
Yeah. Check those in Mr. Hom's giant suitcase that he beams up with.
Yeah. It is weird that he's a human, though, right? Like, that they're part of this tradition, as much as she is.
Yeah, I think that's weird, because you would assume in Betazoid culture that, like, the arrangement would be with another Betazoid.
Yeah.
And so, if you're not going to be Betazoid, you're going to be Riker.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so Betazoids are a species that can, they have telepathic powers, and Troy's are somewhat limited because she's only half Betazoid. But after Wyatt and his crazy parents beam up and kind of are shooed out of the transporter room, Loxana Troy and her manservant, Mr. Hom, beam up, and she starts talking to Deanna Troy in mind speak. So there's a lot of extended scenes where Loxana will be looking suggestively at somebody and beaming her thoughts into their head. And
a lot of scenes where people are just making faces at each other.
Yeah. And they do this like the kind of echoey sound effect on all those voices that they would do in like a Full House episode when a character was thinking something to themselves.
So Mr. Hum is also, you might recognize him as Lurch from the Addams Family.
Yeah, I guess he's probably painted the same gray as he is in the Addams Family, actually.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting. Maybe he just like walked over from the other side of the studio lot.
It could be canonical Addams Family also.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy is so tall. He's like, unless everybody that is in the main cast is super short, he's just like one of these crazy people that you can't even believe exists. He's so tall.
He's so tall that when he beams up, he's beamed up sitting on the big suitcase.
Yeah.
Because when he stands up to full height, his head rocks the ceiling of the transporter.
Yeah. So he's a pretty silent dude. He doesn't do a lot of talking. Loxana beams up and immediately ropes Captain Picard into carrying her luggage, which we hilariously find out is super duper heavy.
You know, anytime you get to make a joke about a woman's size or quantity of luggage, you just have to do it, right?
It's one of the bylaws of Hollywood.
God, women, as Wesley said in the last episode.
She has a princess in Spaceballs level luggage issues.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, Riker is pretty upset for most of this episode. There's a pretty there's a pretty epic scene where they're kind of discussing what's about to go down in the captain's ready room, and the captain walks out, leaving Troy and Riker in there, and Riker just like walks over to a wall and puts an arm against it and just puts a real lean into it. Like, he just really puts a mopey pose on.
Like elbow fully locked, ass fully like shoved out, like
yeah.
Completely dramatic.
It's like, dude, you have slept with this woman. You know she can read your thoughts. You don't need to use the most explicit body language available to you to transmit what you're feeling about this.
Also, dude had his chance. Dude had many chances.
Yep.
What's he so pissed off about?
Yeah, it's kind of weird and possessive given the fact that they are not officially together.
I think the part that's worse than the idea of him missing out on being with Troy forever might be that his replacement is Wyatt, who is like peak 80s. Like,
yeah.
He is incredibly 80s looking.
I was going to save this to the end, but I think I might just inject it now to see if we can kind of call out these moments as they go. I feel like all of the styling when it comes to Wyatt and the aliens that we meet eventually in this episode has a lot to do with the music video for the Aha song.
Yes, yes. I also wrote that down.
the Take On Me universe.
Yeah.
This may be taking place in the Take On Me universe.
This is canonical Take On Me.
So up on the bridge, we find out that there is an unmarked vessel approaching Haven, and the lady that runs the planet down below radios up to say that it's going to be on the Enterprise to run interference on this vessel should its intentions turn hostile. And they keep trying to reach out to this ship and are unsuccessful. Meanwhile, Troy is getting to know her future husband a little bit better, and it turns out that he was real surprised to meet her because he was convinced that it was going to be this woman of his dreams. He's been dreaming about this babelicious 80s blonde lady for his entire life and drawing Take On Me music video style pencil sketches of her his entire life.
Troy seems really cool with it, though. Like, if you were to tell your potential wife, you're great and everything, but God, what I'm dreaming about actually is Kelly Lynch from Roadhouse.
Yeah.
That's not going to go over well. And Troy's like, oh, I understand, but maybe, you know, in time, we'll love each other.
Yeah, which is like, at its best, how arranged marriages work. But
yeah.
It's got to be a tough pill to swallow that, like, basically the main thing that your future husband wants to talk about at all is a bootylicious Southern California beach babe crush.
Yeah, she's straight out of the Hot for Teacher Van Halen video.
Yeah.
And so he drops this bomb on Troy, and they manage to get past it. So Wyatt very dramatically like picks up all the glamour shots pictures that he's drawn and displayed on his table.
Yeah.
And then like hugs them close to his body and walks away. I don't think that's over.
Yeah, he's still holding a candle to this imaginary person.
It is a guiding principle with Darth Vader's face. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So as this ship comes closer, it's traveling at sublight speed, so they have like hours and hours and hours of notice before it gets to the planet. They finally get it up on a long-range monitor, and they identify it as a Terrellian ship. And
they couldn't just stick Geordi in one of the front cabins to see this one coming. They had to wait.
That's a good point. Yeah. We could have just gone down to 10 forward and stared out the window. Yeah, the Terrellians are a species that, you know, there were two factions and they went to war, and one of them used a biological weapon on the others, and they wiped themselves out, more or less, and there were refugees trying to travel around, and it was just kind of a real shit show for their species because, you know, people didn't want to receive the refugees because they had this engineered super virus that would kill them. So a lot of refugee ships got destroyed, and, you know, ones that didn't get destroyed wound up having everybody on board die of the virus. So this is probably, as far as anybody can tell, the last members of the Torellian race.
And the planet's super freaked out because they don't want to get the virus.
Right, and this ship is still not responding to any hails, and the planet radios up to say, like, if this thing gets within transporter range, we're basically all fucked down here, so you need to step it up and do something, Enterprise.
They're a little bit busy with the rehearsal dinner right now.
Right. There is an extended scene in this episode where the parents of Wyatt and Loxana Troi, like, stand around a buffet table bickering about what species traditions will be observed in this wedding. And then that transitions into a dinner scene where people are bickering and squabbling about all the different issues that arise surrounding two families coming together. All the while, Mr. Ham is in the background downing drinks by the bucketful and hitting a gong every time he finishes one.
He is totally raging.
Yeah, he's in it to win it, and Data is standing right next to him just, like, gleefully watching all of the bullshit transpire. You know, you can tell that from an anthropological standpoint, this is as good as it gets for Data. In fact, at one point, Troi, like, gets completely pissed off and runs out of the room yelling that everybody needs to stop the petty squabbling, and Data leans in and says, "Please continue the petty squabbling. I find it fascinating."
Riker bolts just before that, though, speaking of being petty.
Petty and pouty.
He's being a huge baby about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, he does that thing where he lifts a fork up to his mouth and then, like, sets it back down. He just can't even be bothered to eat. He's so distraught.
Yeah. He's reacting to this the same way I would react to the episodes of Fear Factor where somebody would have to eat, like, a bull penis on camera.
Oddly enough, Riker does not have an appetite for the bull penis and instead asks to be excused and goes to the one refuge that he has left, the holodeck.
My love is a creep, but long until for that which longer nurses the disease. You'll have to go again.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait. And I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS, and with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month. For a limited time at ritual.com/scarves, start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi. This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Yeah, and he fires up a surprisingly non-pornographic holodeck program. It's just a rock in a desert planet where he's sitting and pouting to himself.
And I think it's interesting that, you know, they block the scene. Riker's on the rock, staring at a tree, not doing anything. And Troy enters from screen right, as if, like, she hasn't even knocked. She just walks into frame. That is a pretty big roll of the dice.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
I mean, unless you're wearing a head-to-toe raincoat.
Yeah, one of those hazmat suits they wear in Outbreak.
Yeah, she really took a lot of things into her own hands at that moment.
Let's be honest. Troy has had every fluid on her that Riker can produce.
Oh, yeah. All manner of Riker fluids and then all virtual fluids as produced on that holodeck program. You know, it might look really benign to us, but I think if you turn over that rock that Riker is sitting on, it's probably one of those pieces of sex furniture, like like that wedge-shaped sex furniture. And there's some handcuffs, like, buried under the tree. Like, very thinly disguised S&M accoutrement in this scene.
Yeah. You know what else I realized is that it's probably just the same exact set that Q had them facing the animal things, but just with a different color psych rolled in.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what it looked like completely.
Or different gels on the lights, anyways.
Yeah. So Troy walks in and is trying to tell Riker, you know, I still want you to be a part of my life. I got to go through with this. And Riker's like, whatever. Whatever. And then leaves because Wyatt has walked in.
Right.
Also without knocking.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you would hope that somebody would, like, throw themselves across the front door of the holodeck if they know that Troy and Riker are in there together.
It's sort of like college dorm rules.
Yeah.
If you go up to the holodeck and there is a sock on...
one of Riker's gym socks.
Yeah, one of Riker's gym socks on the door handle, then come back later.
Yeah. Same thing for Worf, but for different reasons, you know? You don't want to open that door and have a batleth fly at your head.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a pile of gawk on the doorway.
Yeah, yeah. Just smeared right on that door.
So Wyatt walks in, and Wyatt and Troy have their first kiss, which is real innocent. Like, they barely touch at all.
Yeah. You can tell that Wyatt is... His heart really isn't in it, you know?
Yeah.
He's trying to be game for this, but he's pining away for this hair metal lady.
And if Troy can read his mind, what are you doing, Deanna?
Yeah. She knows what's up.
Yeah. I think she can see the end game.
There is a funny moment in the rehearsal dinner scene where Wyatt first meets Riker and he says, oh,
you're the one who wants to be a starship captain. Yes, I've heard that bonding or marriage would complicate things in that case. To each his own. Good luck with that ambition.
Right.
And Riker looks at Troy like, don't tell people that. Like, sort of the same way I look at my wife when she tells people in public that I have a Star Trek podcast.
That is exactly right. Here's the piece of shameful trivia I know about you.
Yeah. When Wyatt and Troy kiss, it does wind up being a very chaste kiss, but based on the way the camera angle is set up, it looks like he's going for a boob for like the first half second of it. And I was like on the edge of the sofa when I saw that about to happen. Like, he goes as close to going for a boob as it's possible to go on TV without the censors flipping out, I think.
You know, on the Super Bowl, how they can stop a play and just sort of bullet time the camera around from a different angle?
They have that technology on the Enterprise, too, as we'll come to find.
If you're able to, like, forensically move the camera around to see how much room is between his hand and Troy's boob, I think it is microscopic. Like, it looks like there's a graze, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think she's into him, you know? I think she'd be okay with that.
I don't know. I feel like that's an actor taking liberties, and it's wrong.
All right.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
So this ship shows up in orbit. It's still not responding to hails, and the Enterprise throws a tractor beam on it, which... It disables the Turalian ship's ability to use their transporters as well. And knowing that the plight of the Turalians, Wyatt, who is a medical doctor, has been collaborating with the ship's doctor the whole time on a set of medical supplies that they will beam over to the Turalians when they arrive as a sort of humanitarian gesture. But when they engage this tractor beam, the Turalians... appear on screen in a video effect that can be only be described as stealing porn off cable in the 80s. And it is revealed that Wyatt's dream woman is on the bridge of the Turalian ship. So he's pretty taken with this, and he tells Dr. Crusher that he's going to go transport the supplies, but he... uses a hypo spray to disable the weird transporter chief guy. And
yeah, he has a strangely deep voice.
The surface station approval coming in now, Lieutenant.
All right.
He does.
He doesn't look like his voice, you know?
Yeah, he kind of looks like some weird guy that you would meet in the dorm room of your college or something. And then he opens his voice and he sounds like he could be like, you know, backup vocals in a barbershop quartet or something.
Yeah, he's like the bass guy in Boys to Men.
Yeah.
Like, he just doesn't look like he'd have a voice that deep.
So he beams himself over, thus exposing himself to the Turalian virus, which means that he can never beam back. And Wyatt's parents flip out and demand that Picard bring him back, but Picard is like, there's nothing I can do. And it turns out that this Turalian fox has been dreaming about Wyatt the entire time also.
She's 80s foxy, right?
Yeah.
So she's got permanently wet-looking, crimped hair.
She's got kind of a tube top type of deal on with a very, like, a lot of muscle tone in her abs and arms.
Yeah, does a lot of sit-ups for sure.
Yeah. The outfits that the women on this ship wear is sort of the slutty version of what a... uniform at a Mexican family cantina style restaurant might be for women.
Did you find the relationship between Wyatt's dream girl and Wyatt's dream girl's dad a little bit weird? He seemed really affectionate to her, sort of like in a creepy way, the way Rick Bayless is creepily affectionate to his daughter on his series of cooking shows. He totally Baylesses her.
You know, I didn't make the Bayless connection, but now that you bring it up, that's 1,000% there for me. Yeah. Yeah, where you're like, you know, I'm down with a father and a daughter being affectionate, but... This is not the kind of affection that you put out there in the public for the world to see.
In their first communication with the Enterprise, the dad's like, hey, we're the last of the Turalians. There's only 8 of us, and this is my daughter. And he puts his arm around her, and there's like 2 full beats of just yeah. Dad hugging daughter. I don't know. I think he's got some more competition over there.
Gross. But yeah, it turns out, good for Wyatt. She's been dreaming about him the entire time also, although unclear whether Turalians have some kind of telepathic ability or not. I don't know.
Did she draw all those Take On Me pictures? Like when Wyatt beams over, there's like a hall of Franklin Mint plates where like pictures of him through the years have been drawn, like from a little kid all the way up until peak 80s hair Wyatt.
It's just a shame that there wasn't a picture of him holding up a pipe wrench like the end of the Take On Me video.
Oh, man. That is some collectible merch that I wish I had a chance to buy. Like, one of those Take On Me pictures would be hilarious.
Yeah, that would be...
Some fan out there has that, and I am really envious.
Yeah. Throw that up on eBay and give us a heads up.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
That's sort of the end of the episode. The Tyrellians promise not to attempt to beam down to the planet, and Wyatt says that he's going to use his skills of a medical doctor to attempt to cure the Tyrellians of their virus, and so Picard orders the tractor beam to be dropped, and the Tyrellians head out.
They just sort of putt away,
yeah,
at the slowest possible speed.
Yeah, they don't get any help with their warp engines, I guess.
So what's the deal? Like, are they just going to repopulate themselves on board that ship? I don't understand really what the end game is. It's unclear whether or not Wyatt can cure them.
I've read a lot of science fiction that I believe has some good basis in actual scientific research, and I suspect that 8 people, now 9, is not really enough to repopulate a species safely with, you just don't have a deep enough gene pool to avoid congenital issues.
Well, clearly, watching the attraction between father and daughter, I mean, ugh. They've been cooped up on that ship a long time.
Right. Also, like, they've been traveling for years, so what is this virus and how deadly is it?
It doesn't seem that deadly, to be honest. Everyone seems in pretty good health.
They're not, like, sick. They're just, like, doing sex poses the entire time.
The inside of their ship looks like an 80s video arcade. Did you notice that?
It looks like if you put the Take On Me video in Technicolor, you know? Like, all of those drawings could be inside that ship.
We've seen a lot of 80s stuff happen in the series up until now. This might be the peak 80s episode of the ones that we've seen.
Yeah, of the ones that we've seen. I can think of some stuff coming up that's pretty outrageous, but...
Oh, good. And we have to watch them because we have no more vetoes.
Well, for this season.
Well, we have like 40 more episodes until we get to season 2. I'm in hell right now.
This is not the worst Loxana Troi episode.
Sure. I'm ready to believe that.
I mean, she's like Q, right? She shows up about once a season. And
She makes some flip comments about Picard wanting to do stuff to her. She makes some comments about Wyatt's dad wanting to mess around with her. She's got this idea that that people are really attracted to her big time. But she doesn't crawl into Riker's head at all. I think that's because Troi set up a rule about that. What do you think?
That's plausible to me.
Like,
yeah.
Off limits. You cannot get into that guy's head.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, we don't really know, like, what all went down between Riker and Troi before they were both stationed on the Enterprise, but it seems, like, possible that Loxana would have met Riker at some point.
Yeah, but the one thing you don't want to see if you're a mother is, like, an anything-goes relationship that your daughter's involved in, like, in stunning detail.
Yeah, Loxana's a full telepath, so she probably knows some of the shit that's going through Riker's head. Maybe she's just scared of him.
Wouldn't you be?
On a slightly more serious note, I do think that this episode has one thing that I think is actually not totally unsophisticated, which is its treatment of Troi and her mother's conversations surrounding tradition and the wedding. Like, I think that the women I've known that have gotten married have all, like, to a greater or lesser extent, felt like there were cultural obligations, traditional obligations that they needed to fulfill to kind of keep their mothers happy. And that's, like, a really interesting tension that I don't know that there's that many, like, sci-fi shows that will make something like that be the centerpiece of conflict in an episode. So I thought that was cool. Like, I think that anybody that's ever, you know, tried to deal with, like, what kind of a wedding they're going to have and how traditional is it going to be, can kind of relate to. And I thought that was kind of cool.
Not to be media bringing up media, but I just saw a documentary called Meet the Patels. Have you seen that?
I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's really good. And I would recommend it to anyone. But it is about the idea of arranged marriage versus, quote unquote, regular old marriage. And I think the conflicts that kids have with their parents regarding that is just sort of a fascinating dynamic. And you do get some of that in this episode. And it is, as you say, the best part of it. It's the most real feeling.
It's hard to wrap your head around it being an issue in the 24th century, but I guess that's just because I come from a culture that doesn't even consider that as a possibility. So
I thought it was weird just how accepting everyone was at the idea. I mean, save for Riker, but Picard's like, all right, see you later. Like, congratulations or whatever. Yeah. Like, especially Picard.
Yeah, it looks like Troy is going to not be a member of the crew after this episode if this wedding pops off. And
she has the look of someone who is ready to cry, like, right in the next moment, and Picard is sort of oblivious to that idea.
It's not really his place to be, comforting her if she feels obliged to do this.
I think he's clearly still in the state of comforting Tasha Yar.
Yeah. Tasha Yar does her hair up for the celebration meal, and
I was hoping you'd bring this up.
It might be the greatest thing that's ever happened to Tasha Yar's hair. It's basically like she has a pretty short haircut, and she goes as big as she possibly can with this hair, and it's delightful.
You know when you drive by, like, any major city has like 10,000 nail salons in it, and there's the sort of Take On Me style painting of a woman, just a random woman, and then the word nails underneath.
Yeah.
That's what Yar looks like. And that's the only thing that she changed about herself for this formal dinner.
Amazing.
That's the only thing I think anyone changed about themselves for this dinner.
I mean, she got so much volume out of her pretty short haircut, though. Fucking super impressive.
Yeah. Good job by her.
Good job.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Who's your drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I think it's pretty definitively Mr. Hom, the manservant to Loxana Troi. He's super duper drunk. He doesn't say anything throughout the episode. And then as they're preparing to beam off the ship, he turns to Captain Picard and says,
"Thank you for the drinks."
And it's a big surprise that Mr. Hom can speak at all, because he hasn't said anything to anyone.
Yeah, that was our cute ending to the episode. I agree. I think this is the first time we've had a tie. It could be no one else besides Mr. Hom.
A tie? It's not a competition, Adam.
Well, it's the first time that we nominated the same person in the same episode.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
I think that we should just say for anybody new to the show, which I imagine is most of you, because anybody that's listened to one episode has probably turned it off in disgust.
One and done.
Drunk Shimoda is our running assessment of who the most ridiculous character in a given episode is. And if you want an explanation of that, go back to episode 2, Drunk Shimoda.
Right. That is also the episode where I mispronounce his name as Shinoda about 10 times. So that's some fun trivia. That's some behind the podcast for you.
Oh, yeah. Really breaking down that fourth pod wall.
Well, what do we have up next, Ben?
So the next episode is called The Big Goodbye. When holodecks malfunction, the captain and three crew members become trapped in San Francisco, 1941, where they're held hostage by murderous gangsters. So this is the first, I think Captain Picard goes back to this San Francisco private eye character. It's like a kind of a hard-boiled detective story that he likes to vacate in, and surprise, surprise, the holodecks malfunction.
Interesting bit of reception to this episode is that it was nominated for 2 Emmys and actually won a Peabody. I don't know what the Peabody Award is for. I'm imagining it's for achievement in cheesy television. Because the reason I say that is because I just remember any episode where they dress up, you know, in period costume as being just sort of unintentionally cringy.
I don't remember too much about this one, but I'm excited to watch it. And we don't have a choice because we don't have any vetoes left.
Thanks for that, Ben.
Just out of curiosity, would you have attempted to invoke a veto?
Yes.
You would have?
Yeah.
Really?
No doubt.
Wow. Are you just going to say that every time I ask for the rest of the season?
Would you have attempted to reverse my veto?
It's pretty fun, I've learned, to reverse your veto, so maybe yes.
Thanks for that. That's about all the time we have. for this episode anyway. As always, I've been Adam Pranica, and I have been embarrassed.
I've been Ben Harrison, and I too have felt sincere shame.
See you next time.
Bye.